nearly impossible. Arrows flew thicker than raindrops in a storm, their dark heads gleaming in the fury light, shattering where they struck stone or good Aleran steel. But Amara watched as one grizzled old veteran pitched back from the wall, the dark shaft of an arrow piercing his throat, and another man dropped motionless in his tracks, 6 inches of haft and fletching showing from the burst socket of his eye.
"Hold!" Pirellus bellowed. "Hold!"
The legionaries fought with ruthless efficiency. Regardless of the incredible grace of the Marat rushing up the scaling poles, they thrust home spears with deadly accuracy into Marat flesh. Pale barbarians fell from the walls, back into the savage throng beneath, drawing further cries from those below. Again and again, legion spearmen repelled the Marat assaults, shoving the scaling poles back down, driving the warriors clambering up them back with cold steel. The legionaries fought together, each man with his shield partner, so that while one would engage the enemy's weapon, the other would drive a spear home with a short, hard thrust at the vitals or a leg, toppling the attacker from their precarious position atop the walls. Blood stained the Aleran's spears, the legionaries' shields and armor, and spattered thick on the battlements, mute testimony to the courage of the Marat attackers. Below Amara's feet, she could hear the steady thud and thump of the ram being driven at the gates, but suddenly found herself whirling to the walls as a savage-eyed Marat swung himself up between two merlins from a scaling pole and swept a heavy wooden club at her head. Amara ducked the blow, dodged a second swipe that came straight down at her shoulder, and whirled to whip her blade across the Marat's heavy thighs, opening the pale flesh in a sudden river of blood. The Marat screamed and toppled toward her, club flailing. Amara moved lightly to one side, thrusting her short blade at the Marat's ribs as he fell past, feeling the weapon sink home, the quivering, twisting jerk of the Marat's scream, something that coursed through the metal and into her hands. Half revolted, exultant at having survived the exchange, she let out a scream and jerked the sword back, leaping back from the Marat warrior as he tumbled limply down to the courtyard beneath the wall. She looked up, panting, to find Pirellus staring at her. He nodded once, and then called,
"Try to throw them back down the wall on the outside. We don't want clutter where our own troops are moving around."
Then he turned back to his study of the ground below, almost absently frowning when a stone arrow tip shattered against the crest of his helmet. Amara chanced a look over the wall, out at the chaos below, and arrows whistled through the air toward her as soon as she did. She jerked her head back and down to find Bernard crouched next to her. The steadholder, too, took a glance over the wall before half rising to a crouch to lift his bow, drawing the arrow back to his cheek. He aimed for a breath, then loosed the arrow, which threaded its way between a pair of legionaries to sink into the ribs of a Marat with a steel axe, who had gained the wall over a stunned legionary with a dent in his helmet. The force of the arrow's impact drove the Marat back over the wall, and he vanished as he fell.
"Spotted their general yet?"
Bernard called to her.
"I can't see anything," Amara shouted. "They shoot whenever I look."
"No helmet," Bernard said. "I'd shoot at you too."
"That's a comfort, thanks," Amara said, wry, and the steadholder grinned at her, before standing up to loose another arrow into the crowd below and drop back down behind the wall again. Amara stood up to take another look, but Bernard caught her wrist.
"Don't," he said. "They're getting packed in down there. Keep your head down."
"What?"
In answer, he nodded toward Pirellus. Amara turned her head to look at the man and saw him point a finger off to one side at a pair of men standing behind heavy ceramic pots, and 3 armored knights who stood behind them with no weapons in their hands.
"Fire pots?" Amara asked, and Bernard nodded.
She watched as Pirellus lifted his sword and then dropped it, a swift signal. The 2 men with the fire pots, Earthcrafters surely, for only they could lift the man-sized pots of coals so easily, heaved them up and over the wall to crash down into the Marat on either side of the gate. Pirellas signalled the three men behind them, and the knights as one lifted their arms and faces to the sky, crying out over the screams and din of battle. The fire answered them in a roar that deafened Amara and rattled her teeth against one another. Heat swept up, and sudden brilliant light, scarlet and murderous in contrast to the cool blue fury lights, a wind that roared upward, lifting Amara's hair up off her neck. A column of fire shaped like some huge winged serpent rose above the battlements, curled back down, and crashed to the earth below. The battlements mercifully shielded her from seeing what happened to the Marat caught in the sudden storm of living flame, but in the wake of that fire, as its roar died away to echoes, she heard them screaming, men and wolves alike, screaming in terror and in pain, high and breathless. There was madness in those screams, frustration, futility, terror beyond anything that she had heard before. And there was something else. The sure and certain knowledge of death. Death as a release from an agony as pure and hot as the flames that had caused it. A smell rose from the ground before the battlements in those silent moments after. The scent of charred meat. Amara shuddered, sickened. A silence fell, broken only by screams and moans coming from the ground below. She rose and looked down over the ground before the walls. The fire serpent had broken the Marat, sent them and their wolves howling away from the walls of garrison. At a command from Pirellas, the archers stepped forward and sent arrows arching into the retreating barbarians with deadly accuracy, dropping more to the earth, clutching at the barbs, piercing their flesh. She couldn't see much of the ground immediately beneath the walls, for which she felt silently grateful. The smell of burned hair and worse nearly overwhelmed her, until she bade Cirrus to keep it from her nostrils and mouth. She leaned a hand against the battlements and stared out at the blood-soaked, scorched earth, littered with a carpet of pale-haired bodies.
"Furies," she breathed. "They're not much more than children."
Bernard stepped up beside her, his face pale, grim, eyes hidden in shadows beneath his helmet.
"Young warriors," Bernard said. "Their first chance to prove themselves in battle. That was Wolf Clan. One more to go."
Amara glanced at him. "They send their youngest to fight?"
"To fight first. Then, if they survive, they can join the adult warriors in the main battle."
She looked back at the field and swallowed.
"This is only a preliminary to them. It isn't over."
"Not without getting the leader," Bernard said. "Get some water in you. You don't know how much you need it. Next one won't be so easy."
And indeed, a legionare came around carrying a bucket, and a thong threaded through the handles of tin cups, passing water to each man on the walls. More legionares, younger troops from the reserves in the courtyard below, came onto the walls to help carry down the wounded and bear them back to the watercrafters working at the tubs in the courtyard. As usual, those with functional and light injuries were treated first. A round of swift crafting that bound closed, bleeding wounds, mended over simple broken bones, and restored a whole, if weary, fighting man to the defense of the garrison. The more seriously injured were remanded to the care of surgeons, men and women skilled in more pedantic medicinal practices, who labored to keep them alive and stable until one of the watercrafters had the time to attend to their injuries.
"Pretty much like we expected," Pirellas was saying on the wall somewhere nearby.
She focused on the conversation, listening.
"Though the ram was a new technique for them. They learn fast."
Giraldi grunted.
"Children. Crows, but I don't like this kind of bloodletting. How are the men?" "Well enough, for not having slept a full night. Light casualties on the northern side of the wall, only injuries on the south." "Good," Pirellas said. "Get water to everyone and arrows to the archers. Make sure those new firepots get up here in one piece.
and get some food to my firecrafters. They don't do as well on an empty belly.
You want something for that? Giraldi asked.
For what?
You're bleeding.
Edge of my helmet, Pirellis said. Arrow drove it into my skin. Looks worse than it is.
You don't want it bleeding in your eye at the wrong time. Let me get a surgeon up here.
Let the surgeon see to the men that are hurt, Pirellis said, his tone firm.
Get yourself some water too, Centurion.
Aye, sir.
Amara frowned, pensive, and stood up, walking a bit farther down the wall. Bernard sat there, his back against the battlements, frowning down at his hands. Something's occurred to me, Amara said. This doesn't make any sense.
Bernard squinted up at her.
It's like that, your first battle.
She shook her head impatiently. No, not like that. It doesn't make sense for the Marat to do this, to send a fraction of their force against us, and the one least experienced and capable as that. Why should they fight us piecemeal when they could bring everyone against us at once?
Marat don't think like we do, Bernard said. You always get their raw recruits out in front. Sometimes they're out like velites, skirmishing in front of the larger masses of troops, and sometimes they're raiding parties that go out the night before, but they're always in front. This is just another example.
They aren't stupid, Amara said stubbornly. How many of their young men died just now? Hundreds? A thousand? For what? They killed half a dozen legionaries and wounded more that will be back up on the walls in an hour at most. Pirellis stepped down the wall, abruptly standing before Amara, arms akimbo.
You would have preferred it if they had killed more, perhaps.
Don't be stupid, Amara snapped. I just think that there must be something else to what they're doing. She looked at Bernard. Where are the knights we saw before? The Steadholder frowned at her, but Pirellis spoke before he could say anything.
Indeed, Countess, where are they? I acknowledge that the Marat are on the move, but we have seen only one warband thus far, with no horde master in evidence. You will be quite the laughing-stock if Reva brings both his legions here only to find no Marat to face.
Amara's temper flashed, and she faced Pirellis, ready to bring the man to task. Bernard stood up as though to get between them. Down the wall, one of the brass horns sounded a call to arms, a clarion note that clove through the cold, fury-lit air and brought the veteran troops on the wall to their feet, shields and weapons ready before its notes had died away.
"Sir," snapped Giraldi from the wall over the gates, "they're coming again."
Pirellis turned his back on Amara and leapt up to his position over the gate. Out at the edge of the light the Marat appeared again, rushing forward in a howling mob. But this time their screams were punctuated not by the howling of the great dark wolves, but by the metallic whistling shrieks of the giant predator birds that raced beside them as the pale tide charged towards the walls.
"Archers!" Pirellis called again.
And once more, in three humming, whistling waves, Marat dropped to the ground, the life driven from them by Alaran shafts.
"Spears!" Pirellis called,
and once again the legions squared up to face the Marat. But that was where the similarity to the charge of Clan Wolf ended. There were no scaling poles this time, no ram to assault the gates. Instead, the first rank of the Marat, howling their defiance, simply hurled itself at the walls, and running at a furious pace, leapt up to the top. If Amara had not seen it happen, she would never have believed it possible. But the Marat, without aid of any kind, simply hurtled into the air, grasped at the top of the 15-foot wall with one hand, and hauled themselves up to fight. The great birds stalking beside them leapt up too, even higher, furiously beating at the air with their stubby wings, and holding themselves aloft just long enough to rake at the defenders atop the walls with their vicious talons, driving Alaran men back long enough for the young Herdbane warriors to haul themselves onto the battlements and throw themselves forward into battle with a fearless, even mindless, abandon. Amara stared in startled horror as a Marat hauled himself onto the walnut 10 feet from her, and his great bird landed beside him with a scream, its beak slashing wildly at an upraised shield. The Marat lifted his knife and leapt at her, shrieking, while behind him another scrambled atop the wall in his place. Amara tried to dodge to one side, only to realize that there was nothing but the empty air of the courtyard beneath her. She sent out a frantic call to Cirrus, and as the Marat rushed her, took 2 steps out onto the empty air, then sprang back to the stones of the wall behind him. He stared at her, stunned for a moment, even as he spun to pursue her. She thrust with the guardsman's blade, flat of the weapon parallel to the ground, and it sank home at one side of his chest, sliding between ribs and coming out again smoothly. Something shrieked behind her, and hot pain flashed across her back. She threw herself forward and down over the fallen Marat, and turned her head to see the great herdbane lunge toward her, dark eyes glassy and empty of anything like fear, its beak flashing toward her eyes. She threw up her hands, willing Cirrus out before her, and the fury rushed out, sweeping up the great bird and hurling it into a merlin. It stumbled and spun to reorient on her, but even as it did, a heavy-set legionare swept his sword at it in a powerful stroke, and with earth-born strength, swept the herdbane's head from its neck. The legionare flashed her a smile, then turned and hurled himself toward the newest arrival at the top of the walls. Amara struggled to her feet again. Fighting raged all along the wall and had spilled over into the courtyard behind. The reserve troops, after a startled moment, had been ordered forward by their young officers and engaged those Marat who either leapt from the wall or followed the bounds of their warbirds down into the courtyard. More screams, frantic and terrified and wild with battle rage, whirled around her, disorienting, terrifying. On the other side of the gate, the Marat had taken a section of the wall and held it tenaciously, more of their number pouring in at every moment, until Pirellus himself entered the fray. The golden-skinned Parsian drew his dark sword and started what could only be described as a deliberate stalk down the length of the wall, calling legionaries out of his way as he went. He met the first Marat with a blow so swift that Amara never saw it begin. She only saw blood flicker out in an arc, while the Marat tumbled down to the earth below, lifeless. One of the great birds lost its talon when it raked at Pirellus, and its head followed it to the stones a breath later. More Marat threw themselves at the master metalcrafter, both man and beast in a furious wave, but the swordsman was their match. Every motion avoided a blow or enabled him to deal out a stroke of his own, and none failed to be lethal. With a calculated precision, Pirellus swept down the occupied section of the wall, brushing away the enemy like cobwebs, and the legions flooded back into the space, kicking bodies clear of the battlements, fighting savagely to hold the regained section of the walls. Pirellus shook the blood from his sword, expression neutral, remote, and pointed a finger again at the men with the firepots. The earthcrafters removed the lids and prepared to hurl the pots over the battlements to the ground below. The firecrafters behind them stood with their expressions distant, mouths moving silently, calling to their furies in preparation of the hellish storm they prepared to unleash on the enemy. And that was when Amara felt it. When she felt the currents of air thrumming with tension, heard with some part of her that she could not fully describe, the rising tide of wind moving in the darkness above. She turned her face up, only to be blinded by the fury lights mounted above the battlements, veiling the skies above. But all along the wall the winds rose, whipping wildly back and forth. Amara thought she could hear cries above, where Garrison's few knights' heiress should have been patrolling. Something sprinkled down from above, and for a moment she thought that more rain had begun to fall. But the sensation was hot, not cold, and when Amara wiped at her cheek she saw blood smeared upon her fingers.
"Bernard!" she shouted. "They're here!"
She didn't have time to make sure she had been heard. Instead she called to Cirrus and leapt into the air, felt the roar of wind enfold her as she hurtled up, above the battlements and into the darkened sky over the besieged fortress. The air teemed with knights heiress, dueling, whirling pairs of men who swept through the skies in deadly combat, as much between furies as men, each trying to cut off the other's flow of air, or to wound their opponents badly enough with their blades to shatter their concentration and send them falling. Even as she watched, one of the men in Reaven colors whirled away from a flickering blade, only to let out a sudden terrified scream and begin to plummet from the sky like a stone. He fell past Damara and onto the ground before the walls of Garrison, the thud of impact swallowed by the tumult beneath them. Amara swept her gaze around the sky, picking out the shapes of airborne knights as much with Cirrus's senses as her own, and found 30 at least, 3 times the number of the fortress's defenders. More graceful battles played out above and around her, but their outcome was a foregone conclusion. Garrison's knight's heiress would be driven from the skies or killed, and the enemy would control all movement above the fortress. Amara spotted, high and at the rear of the enemy positions, what she had dreaded. Several litters, borne by more knights. Litters that would carry more of the powerful fury crafters they had faced before. Even as she watched, several knights formed an escort around 3 of the litters, and the whole of the group dove toward the embattled fortress. Specifically toward the gates where Pirellus and his knights directed the Alaran defenses. Amara did not take time to consider her plan. Instead, she gathered Cirrus beneath her and sent herself hurtling up toward the oncoming litters. A startled knight turned to face her in the air, but with an almost casual gesture she flashed past him, dealing him a blow that began a cut low on one of his legs and ran all the way up his back to his shoulder, shearing through the leather leggings he wore, and even biting through some of the mail upon his back. He let out a cry and fell, his focus fluttering with his pain, dropping toward the earth like a leaf cut from a tree. Amara hurled herself forward and used a terrific rush of air to catapult her up. Then, while her momentum still carried her toward the foe, she gathered Cirrus's presence up before her and sent the fury lashing out at those supporting one of the litters. She wasn't strong enough to cut all 4 of the knights bearing the litters from their furies, and she hadn't even tried. Instead, she had focused on the 2 forward knights, intending only to cut off their wind for a few crucial seconds. She succeeded. The men let out startled cries and fell straight down, taking the poles whose weight they supported with them. And dumping a 6 screaming men inside the litter into the open air. 2 of the men still wore their restraining straps and dangled precariously on the litter as the knights bearing it struggled to right it again. But the others, evidently anticipating a quick dismount upon the walls, had already unstrapped. Those 6 plummeted toward the ground, and though a few of the escorting knights plunged after them, Amara knew that they would never be able to save the men from a fall so close to the earth. She felt dozens of eyes focus on her at once, as her momentum carried her to the peak of its energy, then let her begin to fall again. She spun in the air, faced down, and kept her limbs in close to her body to keep from being slowed as she reached out to gather Cirrus back to her, and to re-establish her own wind stream before one of the other knights of the air cut her off. 6 wind streams converged on her at once, and she clawed for air in frustrated terror, even as the fury lights of the fortress below loomed closer. She got lucky. So many of the enemy had moved to cut her off that she was able to use their own efforts against one another, writhing the wind streams into a tangle, and then altering the direction of her fall with her arms and legs. Cirrus gathered beneath her in a rush, and she gained control of her fall, just as another knight, less reticent than the others, swept toward her, light gleaming on his drawn sword. Amara twisted to one side, but he matched her fall, and the sword swept at her. She caught it on her own blade and pressed in close, sword to sword, struggling to gain control of the wind around them and turn it to her advantage. Her foe gripped her wrist, and they began to spin wildly, still falling. Amara shot a glance down at the courtyard welling up before her eyes, and looked up to her foe's face just as he did the same. There was a mute moment of concord, and then both pushed away from one another, furies gathering beneath them in a roar, attempting to slow their fall. Amara got one frantic look at Garrison beneath her and guided her fall into a stack of hay bales beside the stables. The bales, solidly packed, would have done little to break her fall without Cirrus rushing currents, both slowing the impact and scattering the bales into loose strands. Amara crashed through the topmost stack of bales and out onto the ground on the far side. Her foe, more able than she, or less tired, landed neatly on the ground beside her and pivoted to drive his blade at her throat. She caught the thrust on her own sword, barely, parrying the blade into the bale of hay beside her, while her other hand dragged the short knife she'd stolen from Fidelius from her belt and drove it back into the windcrafter's boot. He fell back with a yelp, then gestured with his hand, expression murderous. The wind roared, and Amara felt pressure pin her hard to the ground. She struggled to move or to lift her sword, but the man's fury kept her from doing it. She reached for Cirrus, but she knew she had been too slow, and she could only watch as he lifted his blade again. There was a buzzing hiss, and an arrow drove through the knight's mail shirt where it crossed just beneath his throat. The arrow drove him back a pair of jerking steps before he fell dead to the stones. The pressure on Amara abruptly eased, and she could breathe again, move again. She started struggling to her feet, but still dizzy from the fall and her efforts to control it, had only got partway there when Bernard reached her, his bow still in hand, and said,
"Crows and furies, are you all right? Where are they coming in?"
"The gate," Amara gasped. "The fire pots. Get them off the gate. Hurry!" Bernard's face went pale, and he pelted off across the courtyard back toward the walls. A Marat, dazed from a fall from the battlements above, lifted a stone-headed hatchet. But Bernard flicked a hand, and the hatchet's wooden haft abruptly spun in its owner's grip, the back of the stone whipping into the Marat's temple and sending him in a loose tumble to the ground. Amara felt a dull pain in her shoulder and back, and it was too much effort to stand. But she watched as Bernard bounded up one of the ladders and onto the wall. He took his bow in a two-handed grip and clubbed his way past a Marat fighting a pair of legionaries and ducked past the flashing claws of a wounded herdbane that lay on its side, raking wildly with its remaining leg to reach Pirellus's side. He gripped the knight commander's shoulder and shouted to him over the din. Pirellus's face blanked with incredulity, but Bernard pointed up, and Pirellus turned in time to see the first of the other pair of litters sweeping down, mailed knight's heiress all around it. His eyes widened, and he shouted to his men on the walls, even as a roar of wind sent men flat to the battlements and drove leaping Marat back and away from the walls. Bernard lost his bow but stayed on his feet, drawing on the strength of his fury, Amara knew. He grabbed Pirellus and another man beside him and dragged them forward and off the wall to fall into the courtyard beyond. Amara's eyes swept back up to the litters, to see Fidelius in one, pointing down and calling something to one of the men in the other, a tall, thin man with pinched features. The man stood up, eyes closed, and reached out his hand. In answer, the firepots, waiting on the walls beside the firecrafters now pinned down by the gale winds above them, exploded into blinding flame. The firestorm swept over the walls above the gates where Garrison's knights were pinned down. Scattered and whipped to a dangerous fury by the wind, more of the flame nonetheless rushed out along the walls, playing havoc with legionaries, Marat, and predator birds alike. The fire went over the walls like a scythe, sending men screaming to the ground, running from the flames, rolling frantically to put out their own burning bodies. Some even leapt off the battlements and into the savage Marat horde waiting below. Amara watched in stunned horror as the litters swept down to the courtyard, where a half a dozen disorganized legionaries attacked the invaders. Aldric ex Gladius dismounted from the litter, and with the knight's heiress with him, met them and drove them back. Fidelius stepped from the litter and walked to the gates. As Amara watched, he glanced around him, eyes quick and hard, and then laid his bare palms against the heavy wood. For perhaps half a minute he stood there, eyes closed. Then he withdrew, barked an order to his men, and limped back to the litter. Aldrich and the others withdrew to the litter, and the whole of the group swept up into the air again and out of sight. Amara regained her feet, finally, and recovered her sword. She lifted her head to see what Fidelius had done to the gates. She saw them shudder. Then she saw dust fly from one of them, and then the cruel, rending talon of one of the herdbanes ripped through the heavy beams of wood as though they were paper and tore its way back out again. She could only watch in numbed horror as the Marat, howling like madmen, hauled the gates of garrison to kindling before her eyes and began to pour into the fortress. She swallowed, her head still whirling, her hand trembling as she gripped her sword, and stepped forward to meet them. Chapter 37 Amara looked left and right as she approached the gate, even as the Marat began to tear their way through it. To one side, several of the young legionaries stood, stunned and horrified, staring as the Marat poured in. To the other, scorched bodies and badly burned men lay, scattered as they had fallen from the walls above, along with the dazed-looking Bernard and Pirellus, gathering themselves together after the explosion on the walls and the fall after. "Form up!" Amara shouted toward the legionaries, but she wasn't sure the young men even heard her. She singled out one of the young men in a centurion's helmet and barked, "Centurion! Hold the gate!" The young man in his fine cape looked from her to the gate to the shattered walls above, eyes wide, mouth trembling. "Back!" he stammered, though it seemed that no one listened to him. "Fall back!" Amara looked to the other side in desperation. "Pirellus!" she shouted. "Get up! Command the legion!" Pirellus, his helmet blasted from his head, the hair on one side scorched nearly to his scalp, stared at her in blank incomprehension. The Marat tore through the last fragments of the remaining gate, and the first, a burly young warrior wielding a stone-headed axe, shoved his way through. There was no time for anything else. If the Marat gained control of the gates, they would be able to pour into garrison, and nothing would stop the weight of simple numbers from smothering the Alaran defense. Though her head still spun, and though the injury on her back still pained her, Amara threw herself toward the sundered gates. She heard herself let out a shrill cry, even as the Marat warrior turned to face her and swept the axe in a great flat arc meant to shear her in half at the hips. Instead, she reached out for Cirrus and leapt, throwing herself neatly over the axe and sweeping her blade out at eye level. The fine steel of the blade bit into the Marat's face, and he dropped to the ground with a scream, even as one of the huge warbirds tore its way through the gates. Amara tried to dodge from its path, but the beast's beak shot out and gripped her left arm in a sudden crushing grip. Pain flashed through her, and she knew that only the mail had kept her arm from being snipped off at the elbow. The bird shook its head violently left and right, throwing Amara about like a puppet, until she slashed desperately at the base of the bird's thick neck, eliciting a brassy shriek and causing the bird to hurl her away from it. Another Marat came through the gates, but the wounded herdbane whipped around at the sudden motion, snapping and lashing with its brassy beak, driving the Marat back. Amara let out a cry and drove forward, thrusting with the guardsman's sword, sinking it into the bird's vitals and whipping it forth with a half-twist that sent the beast snapping and clawing its way to the ground in a welter of gore. Amara gasped for breath as the Marat warrior came through, aiming another cut at this one. He dodged to one side, making way for a second, this one a lean young woman carrying an old Alaran saber. The Marat female thrust at Amara's face, and the young cursor swept the blow aside, only to be hit hard in the flank and thrown to the ground by the first attacker. She struggled and fought against him, letting out a furious, futile cry, but he had gotten inside her guard and pinned her sword arm to the ground. He lifted his fist, his face emotionless, and drove a blow into her mouth that stunned her for a moment, left her silent. Then he said something in a guttural tongue, satisfaction in the tone, as his hand gripped her hair hard, and he turned her head slightly toward the woman, who lifted the old saber for a downward blow.
Scalping me, Amara thought. They're taking my hair.
There was a sudden shriek, high-pitched and panicked. The Marat warrior leapt back and off Amara, even as his companion lifted her saber and engaged the furious, reckless assault of one of the young legionaries. The young man hacked and chopped with his legion blade, more in elemental fury and brutality than in any coherent assault, and drove the pair away from Amara. He turned back to the other young legionaries, and Amara recognized the young man who had been on guard at the gates the day before from the purpling bruise on his jaw.
"Come on!" he snarled to his companions. "Are you going to stand there while a woman fights?"
He turned back to his opponents with a cry of,
"Reva for Alera!"
and attacked again. First one, then two, then several more legionaries surged forward with sharp cries of fury, joining together in a shield wall that contained the tide of Marat struggling to pour in through the shattered gates. But the young legionaries, though they acted in concert, began to be driven back step by steady step. Amara felt herself hauled back along the ground by one elbow and barely managed to keep hold of her sword. She looked up dazedly to find healer Haga crouching over her, fingers touched lightly to her temples.
"The arm's broke," he said a second later, voice rough. "Maybe some of your teeth, too. There are broken rings in the mail over your back that are cutting into it, and something is sprained. But you'll live."
He shot a glance up at the embattled gate, then gave her a quick smile and said,
"Bravely done, girl. Shamed those city boys into the fight at last."
"Pirellus," Amara managed to gasp. "Other side of the gate. Stunned."
Haga's eyes widened.
"Great furies. He lived through that.
Bernard pulled him off the wall."
Haga nodded, tense, and hauled her to her feet.
"Show me. If anyone can do anything, it will be Pirellus."
Amara gasped with the pain and saw the healer wince and draw in a quick breath of his own. He steadied her, and then she led him forward, around the slow pressure of bodies and the desperate thrust and hack of weapons at the gate, to where she'd seen Bernard and Pirellus moments before. She found them, Bernard just now starting to stagger to his feet, Pirellus still on his hands and knees. Haga went to the knight at once, touching fingers lightly to his temples, then grunting and shaking the man roughly. Haga hauled back a hand to deliver a slap to the knight commander's face, but Pirellus caught the healer's wrist as it swept toward him. He shook his head once, blinked his eyes, looked up at the gates, and then staggered to his feet to stare up at the walls. Then he spun, looking around the courtyard, and nodded to Amara.
"Countess," he said, voice haggard. "That blast will have heated the stones, but they'll cool quickly, and Marat will be coming over them even if we hold the gate."
Amara swallowed. "What do we do?"
"Move these legionaries up to the walls,"
Pirellus said.
"Then who will hold the gate?"
His chin lifted a fraction.
"I will."
Amara stared at him.
"Alone? Who will command the legion?"
"They won't need much commanding in this," Pirellus said. "They'll hold the walls and I'll hold the gate or we'll all be dead in the next few moments."
"How can they hold the walls?"
"They can't for long," he said. "You'll have to figure out something."
Amara snapped.
"What? That's not a plan."
"It's all I have," Pirellus said. "Countess, I hope to the Furies you're clever as well as brave. If you don't find some way to get them off of us, we're dead. Right here, right now."
And with that, he nodded to Amara and stepped toward the melee at the gate. He paused, halfway there, to pick up a long, heavy length of wood that had been one of the drawing traces of a cart, crushed by falling debris. He turned crisply and handed it to Bernard as the dazed steadholder stood up.
"What do you want me to do?"
Bernard said.
"Follow me," Pirellus said. "Keep any strays off my back. Stay out of my way."
Then he turned and walked into the struggle at the gate. With a few harsh, barked phrases, he stepped up between the young legionaries and drew his sword. Within seconds, three Marat warriors lay bleeding on the ground, and their advance halted. Pirella snarled orders at the young legionaries, and after a frantic half-moment they moved, breaking into a pair of elements and heading up the stone stairs to the battlements, slopping buckets of water ahead of them to cool the heated stones as they went. Pirella stood in the gates, alone. Amara saw him set a grim, polite little smile onto his lips. He bowed to the Marat standing just beyond the gate, and then with the fingers of one hand, beckoned them forward. Bernard gripped the heavy wooden pole and swallowed, looking back at Amara. His eyes were a little wide, and he drew in an unsteady breath, but he turned back to the gate and stood perhaps 10 feet behind Pirellus, standing steady. Amara felt a scream of frustration well up in her, even as the Marat again began to come through the gate by ones and twos. The Parthian swordsmen met them, more than a match, and first one, then another of the barbarians fell to the dark sword. But even Pirellus was not untouchable. A pair of warriors came through together, facing him. Pirellus neatly parried a thrusting spear and spun to thrust toward the other warrior, and suddenly hesitated, faced with a half-naked young Marat woman. He did not pause for so long as the space of a breath before he lunged forward, driving the dark sword between her breasts, but that hesitation cost him. The Marat beside him swept the butt end of the spear at his leg, striking the side of his knee with a crunch of impact, and if Bernard had not stepped forward to drive the young warrior to the earth with an overhand sweep of the thick wooden pole, Pirellus might have been killed. Instead, the warrior grimaced, moving with no more than a slight limp, and continued what Amara knew would ultimately be a hopeless, if heroic, defense of the gates. Haga came to her side, his eyes sunken, worried, as they travelled up to the walls, and Amara looked to see the legionaries there engaging the enemy, heard the screams of the warbirds and of their Marat masters.
"Lady," Haga growled, "what do we do?"
Amara wanted to scream at the man out of sheer frustration and fear. Even as she watched, a young legionare fell from the wall, screaming and clutching at his face, blood pouring from his fingers. He fell no more than a few feet away. Bernard barely dodged a suddenly thrust spear as he swept another Marat from Pirellus's flank. How was she to know what to do? She wasn't a military commander. The abrupt destruction of Garrison's knights had crippled their defences, she knew. How was she to know how to overcome that loss? Amara drew in a sudden breath. She wasn't. She sheathed her sword and seized Haga's sleeve. "Healer, take me to Count Graham." He did so at once, leading her to the centre of the fortress, where a pair of senior legionaries stood guard before the door of a heavy, practical structure of brick. Amara swept past them and into a building, up a flight of stairs, and into the Count's bedchamber. Graham lay in his bed, his head to one side, his face grey, eyes sunken. There were flecks of some kind of white film on his lips, and his broad, capable hands lay limply on the sheets, looking frail, the skin as thin as parchment. Amara looked at the man and swallowed. She knew that what she was about to do might kill him. She did it anyway. "Wake him up, Haga." Haga let out a shaking breath.
"Lady, I can. But it could..."
"I know it could kill him, healer," Amara said. "But if the walls or the gate falls, he'll be dead either way. We need him. The garrison needs him. I do not think that he would wish us to let them fall when he might be able to help." Haga looked at her for a moment and then shook his head. The old healer sagged for a moment, his face drawn.
"No, I don't suppose he would."
"Get him moving," Amara said quietly. "I'll get the guards to help carry him." She went downstairs to the two legionaries there, returning with them to Graham's bedchamber. She found Haga standing over the old count, whose face was flushed with unnatural colour. Graham dragged in a panting breath and opened his eyes, squinting at her. He grunted and said,
"Harger says my knights are gone. Just the green troops left."
"Yes," Amara said, her voice tight. "They're on the walls. Pirellis is alive but wounded, holding the gates alone.
We need to get you out there."
"No," Graham said. "Don't bother. Won't do any good."
"But, sir..."
"Fire!"
Graham croaked. The enemy used the knights' firepots against them, made them explode on the walls. Graham closed his eyes.
"Are they all at the gates?"
"No," Amara said. "They're up on the walls again, too, spread all along them."
"Can't be done,"
Graham said, sighing.
"Even if I wasn't hurt, even if we had more firepots, can't call up that much fire that wide."
"There's got to be something you can do," Amara said, dropping a hand onto his.
"Nothing,"
Graham whispered.
"Can't burn something that wide. Not strong enough."
Amara chewed on her lip. "What about another kind of crafting?" Graham opened his eyes again.
"What?"
"A fire crafting," Amara said. "The Marat can't counter it with anything." Graham looked from Amara to Harger, then back again.
"Fear,"
he said.
"Fire."
"I don't know if they're afraid of fire."
"No,"
Graham said, his expression weakly irritated.
"Get fire. Get a torch. You."
Amara blinked at him. "Me? But I'm no firecrafter." Graham waved a hand impatiently, cutting her off and fixing her with glittering eyes.
"Can't walk. Someone else has to carry. Are you afraid, girl?"
She nodded, tightly, once. He cackled.
"Honest. Good. Get a torch. And get ready to be brave. Braver than you've ever been. Maybe we can do something."
Graham broke off, coughing, the sound weak, his face twisting into a grimace of pain. Amara traded a look with Harger, then nodded to one of the legionaries. The man stepped out, returning with a torch a moment later.
"Here, girl,"
Graham whispered, beckoning with one hand.
"Bring it close."
Amara did, kneeling down by the bed and holding the torch out to the wounded count. Graham closed his eyes and reached his bare palm into the flame. Amara winced, almost drawing the torch away, but Graham did not stir or flinch, and his flesh remained, it would seem, untouched by the fire. Amara felt it inside of her at first, a panicky little thrill that raced through her belly and thighs, turned her legs watery and uncertain. Her hand started to shake, and she lifted her other to hold the torch steady. Graham let out a slow, quiet sound of pain, and the sensation in her redoubled, mindless and sudden fear, so that she had to fight to keep from bolting from the room. Her heart abruptly raced, pounding frantically. The pain of her wounds seemed to increase, and she suddenly could not get a breath.
"Girl,"
Graham rasped, opening his eyes again.
"Listen to me. Get this out to the front. Out in front of all of the Marat. Get it to where they can see it."
He let out a wheezing breath, his eyes closing.
"Don't drop it. And don't let the panic take you. Hurry."
Amara nodded, rising to feel her body trembling, weak with fright.
"Steady," Harger said. "Get out there. Hurry. I'm not sure how long he can hold the crafting."
Amara had to stammer twice before she managed to say, "All right." She turned and walked from the chamber, fighting to control her breathing, to keep her paces steady, even. The fear flowed through her like winter ice, cold little chips of it flowing in her blood, making her heart skip painful beats. She could barely keep her thoughts focused on the gates, on carrying the torch without dropping it, though she struggled to remember that if she dropped it, or if she surrendered to the fear and fled, that Graham's efforts would be for nothing. She felt herself begin to sob as she walked into the courtyard, felt her body begin to weaken with the mind-numbing terror. More than anything, she wanted to turn away from the gate, to flee, to take to the air and leave their savage enemies far behind. Instead, she kept on, toward the gates, growing weaker, less steady by the step. Part of the way there, she swayed and fell, and her tears blinded her. But she kept moving forward, crawling on her knees and her wounded arm, clutching at the torch and keeping it from falling to the ground. Suddenly, from right in front of her, someone screamed, and she felt herself hauled to her feet with terrifying strength, facing a towering giant with blazing eyes bearing a cudgel the size of a tree in one fist. She fought against the terror, against the sobs that choked in her throat.
"Bernard," she said. "Bernard, the torch! Get me to the walls! Get me to the walls!"
The giant scowled and roared something at her that had her choking down a hysterical scream. Then he simply picked her up under one arm and carried her to the stairs and up them, to the frantic, screaming panic of the battlements. She felt herself come down on her feet again, and she staggered forward toward the walls above the gates. She could not think, could not control herself over the last few feet. She staggered forward, screaming and sobbing, bearing the torch aloft and certain that death was there for her, breathing softly, black wings rustling like those of the crows that waited somewhere in the pre-dawn darkness to sweep down on the eyes of the dead. Somehow she gained the battlements over the gate and stood above them, a sure and simple target for Marat archers, the torch held aloft. It went up, in a sudden furnace of sound and heat, an abrupt river of roaring light that shot into the sky and lit the ground for a mile in every direction. All of that terror, all of that fear in her blossomed out with the torch, poured out with the sudden raging flames, swept out of her, magnified a thousandfold, onto the ground beneath. There was an instant horrible stillness, as the power of the firecrafting swept over the Marat below. And then a scream, born in one moment from thousands of throats, rose up into the air. The pressure of the Marat assault vanished, more quickly than it had arrived. The pale tide of Marat warriors abruptly flooded back from the walls of garrison, howling in terror, joined by the whistling, panicked shrieks of the fleeing warbirds. The battered legionaries defending the walls began to cheer as the Marat were swept under by the firecrafting and broke and ran. Amara saw them go, even as the terror flowed out of her, poured out together with whatever strength she had left. She staggered and nearly fell from the battlements, only to be supported by Bernard, who had appeared behind her. She leaned back against him, exhausted and barely able to keep her eyes open, while all around her Aleran warriors threw defiant cheers after the fleeing enemy. She closed her eyes, and when she opened them again the sky was lighter. She sat on the battlements wrapped in Bernard's cloak. Numb, aching, she swayed to her feet and looked up and down the wall and down into the courtyard below. The wounded, the dying, and the dead lay everywhere. Healers and surgeons alike labored with the fallen, with men burned so badly that they could hardly be recognized as human. Amara watched as one man let out a choking shriek and then stiffened, a blackened hand curled into a claw. The legionary with him, himself sporting a scarlet-stained bandage, drew a cloak over the man's head. Then, with the help of another legionary, he carried the body to a growing number of rows of corpses on the other side of the courtyard. She turned and looked down the walls. Perhaps a dozen legionaries stood along them, young, strained, unwounded, holding their spears at attention. On the battlefield below the walls, the crows had come for the dead. They swarmed over them in a croaking black carpet, wings flapping, eyes glittering with glassy hunger, uncaring of the loyalties of the fallen. They hopped from body to body, tearing at tongues, eyes. And when Amara saw one of the bodies stir, only to be buried in the winged beasts, She felt her numb belly twist and turned away. Bernard appeared a moment later, his face strained, and handed her a ladle of cold water. She drank. "It's bad," she said quietly.
"Bad," he agreed. "Even once we get the lightly wounded back on their feet, the garrison lost two-thirds. There are only 3 knights still alive, counting Pirellus. The gates are broken and there's no way to replace them, and the enemy can jump the walls in any case."
"How's Graham?"
"Harga says he isn't likely to wake up again before he dies. That last crafting took too much out of him."
"Crows," Amara swore softly. "He's a brave man."
"Yes."
"The Marat are coming back, then," Amara said.
"Soon."
She closed her eyes wearily. "What else can we do?"
Bernard said, "I don't know."
"We should get the women and children out, the men's families. Put them in wagons and send them toward Riva as fast as they can go."
"We can't. Those knights didn't just take out the gates. Some others got into the stables and panicked the horses. It drew the attention of maybe 6 herdbane. There aren't any horses left."
Amara looked up at him. "Can they flee on foot?"
"I've talked to Pirellus about it, and Giraldi. Even on the causeway, the women and children can't run faster than the Marat. Even if we hold on to garrison for as long as possible. There just aren't enough men, and most of the families won't leave. They've decided that they'll stay and fight, rather than be killed running. Pirellus is keeping their spirits up, telling them that reinforcements are bound to come from Riva."
"No," Amara said, numb. "I never thought they'd have so many knights heiress to use to cut off the valley. I don't think anyone could have gotten through that many."
Bernard nodded once. "We've sent out runners on foot to warn the Steadholds. We're hoping to buy them some time. If they head for Riva right away, they might make it out of the valley."
He let his voice trail off, tiredly. Amara stood up beside him and leaned against him. He leaned back, and the two shared a long moment of silence in the pre-dawn stillness.
"You should go," Bernard said. "You can fly out of here. You should take word to the First Lord."
"Even if I could still fly," Amara said, "my duty is to do what I can to stop what's happening here, to find out who began it, bring those responsible to justice. I couldn't just leave."
"There's no reason for you to die here, Countess."
"There's no point in this argument, Steadholder. I can't fly. Not now. I'm too tired." She leaned her cheek against his shoulder. He felt strong and warm, and she took whatever comfort she could in that. After a moment, she felt him move an arm around her, and she pressed closer to him. "I'm sorry, Bernard," she said. "I'm sorry I wasn't faster. I didn't do something differently. I'm sorry about your sister, your nephew." He swallowed. When he spoke, his voice came out rough, quiet.
"Nothing to be sorry for. I just hope to the Furies that they're all right."
She touched his arm and they stood together, quiet, with the cause of the crows before them and the moans of the dying behind. The sky lightened further, and Amara felt Bernard draw in a sudden breath.
"Merciful Furies."
She opened her eyes and looked out onto the plains beyond garrison, now being lit as the sun rose over them and shone down upon a sea of pale bodies. The Marat. Thousands upon thousands of Marat. They stretched from horizon to horizon as far as the eye could see. 20,000, 30, 50. She had no way to accurately estimate numbers that vast. She looked out at them as the horde poured slowly closer to garrison over the plains. Enough to drown the defenders of the little fortress. Enough to swarm over the Calderon Valley. Enough to rampage over the unprepared lands beyond and to destroy thousands of defenseless Alaran communities. She glanced up at Bernard and then stepped forward, away from him, to lean one hand on the battlements, watching the enemy come on. "You'd better get Pirellus," she said quietly.
Tell him to get ready.
Chapter 38. Though they were not cold, Isana's feet were battered and bruised by the time she dragged the shambling Odiana out of the rough undergrowth of the woodland and out onto the causeway that ran